Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, I'm delighted to welcome now the King of the Swingers himself, Paddy Cole. Paddy, thanks so much for coming in.
Not at all. Thank you, Brendan. It's great to be here. And as you know, I just rushed over from Sunshine Radio, did my own show this morning.
You're plugging all it. So listen, we're going to talk about music, and music obviously a huge part of your life. But you inherited the music from your father, didn't you? Was he the first man in Monaghan to have a saxophone?
That's right, yeah. My father, he was Paddy as well. He played in dance bands and orchestras at the time. And at that time, it would have been semi-professional. He worked in the post office as well. And it was tough going, like, because they could be playing at a hunt ball in County Mead that might go on till 3 o'clock in the morning, and they'd get home and he'd be up the next morning on the way to work. But he had the tutor out for the alto sax, and he used to put me through my paces with the tutor. And when I came home from school, I had to go in and practice that. And I used to hate it at the time because I could hear the guys playing football out the window. And I had to practice it because when he came in the evening, then he would get out the other saxophone and we would play it together. He had all the big American bands like Duke Ellington, Count Basie, all those LPs at the time. Yeah. And we had the old wind-up gramophone and we used to play them on that. And then I suddenly developed a love for that sort of music.
And come here, it was a nice way to have a relationship with the dad as well, was it, that you did something together, like?
It was wonderful, and we actually finished up playing in a band together.
Really?
The two of us, yeah.
Yeah.
And the first time I played a concert in Casablanca, I was only 12, and I was being featured, 12-year-old Paddy Cole, big deal, and I was doing a solo. And when I stood up to play the solo, I froze, couldn't play a note. But my father came in and played the first couple of bars and then I came in. So he saved my bacon.
So you were like the little Stevie Wonder of Casablanca. You were your child prodigy, right?
I was a wonder in some ways, all right. But
So your first choice today then is Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie. So this is the kind of music that was played in the house at home, was
it? Yes, I love that sort of music. Ella Fitzgerald, I saw Ella Fitzgerald in the 60s in the old Adelphi Cinema here in Dublin. I saw one of the best shows I ever had the privilege of seeing in Vegas. To tell the story, Frank Sinatra was having a dispute with Caesar's Palace and he didn't show up for one of his gigs, and the room was closed. It was dark for a week. So the bosses were going bananas. So the next time he was due back, in case he wouldn't show up, they booked the Count Basie band, Ella Fitzgerald. And Sinatra did show up. Talk about a night. Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, the Count Basie band. It was one of the best.
You were there?
Trees. I was at the show.
Sure.
And we were all at the show because the bosses where we were playing, they used to phone up the bosses there and say, "Oh, these Irish guys want to go to that show tonight, that blues singer," and they would have no interest in the music, just as long as the people were coming in and packing the place and gambling afterwards. That was the big deal, to get them in gambling. But that was one of the best nights of my life. Ella Fitzgerald, Count Basie band, and Sinatra himself.
Wow. Okay, let's have a listen to Paddy Cole's first choice, Ella Fitzgerald and Count Basie. This is On the Sunny Side of the Street.
Afraid. These problems are over.
variety, isn't it? Ella Fitzgerald, Count Basie and his orchestra, and On the Sunny Side of the Street, and that's Paddy Cole's first choice. So, Paddy, you grew up with jazz and then started working in the show bands. Were the show bands kind of, was there a jazz element to it, or was that more rock and roll and hop?
I started off with a local band in Castleblaney, Morrison Lynch's band, and we had three saxes, trumpet, trombone, sitting down reading music. And then the Clipper Carlton started the show band craze. And this was something unique, that the bands were actually standing up and playing.
Right.
And that they had bright blue suits instead of black dress suits and dark dicky bows and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And so the Clipper Carlton revolutionised the whole thing.
But it kind of came out of the big band idea, didn't it?
Very much so. And one of the things that later on that stood to the show bands was that they could play all sorts of music. They used to jazz, Dixieland jazz especially, country and western music, ballads, slow ballads, Irish music. And it stood to them. That was where the name show band came from. And, I started off then in 1960 I joined the Capital Show Band. And they were handpicked. There were two guys from Cork, two guys from Donegal, two fellas from Galway, Butch Muir was from Dublin, myself from Monaghan. And that was the force of the hand-picked bands from different parts of the country all playing together. And the band became very successful, hugely successful.
Can you convey to people who are too young to understand it the kind of mad energy of the dance halls and the show band scene?
Yeah, we would be working 5 or 6 nights a week, and ballrooms were springing up all over the country. Overnight, ballrooms were being built. It was a great thing for country people especially, because now there was some place to go, and the old boy meets girl situation got a lot easier because the ballroom was there. And as a friend of mine says, there wasn't a cock of hay left standing the next morning and then the fields round them. But the ballroom sprang up all overnight, and the place would be packed, and there would be a relief band on, a band that would play for a while before us. And then when we came on the stage, everybody swarmed out to the front of the stage. And for the first half hour or so, nobody danced. They all just stood and watched the band. So we used to put on a show. Yeah. And we would imitate American singers, English singers and all that, and do our own interpretation of different tunes like that. It was a very exciting time to be involved in.
I can imagine, yeah. And you must have felt like rock stars up there, did you?
Oh, God, it was unbelievable. Especially when Butch, after Butch represented Ireland in the song contest, we came back and we were doing the Arcadia in Cork, and they had to get police, a couple of police, to get Butch to the stage. Normally, they used to have to get police to save us from the crowd, but to get Butch from the stage over to the dressing room, they had to have the guards had to come in and help him.
Wild, wild. Yeah. So your next choice brings us back to that time, and this is Brendan Boyer and the Royal Show Band and the Hucklebuck. Why did you pick this?
Well, I shared the stage with Brendan for about 5 years, on and off, at home here and in Las Vegas. And he was a great artist. And when you think of the likes of Elvis Presley coming in to see Brendan doing his act. And,
did he, yeah?
Presley came in to see us, and he actually came up and he was dressed in a cloak, like the Sandy Manport type outfit, and a cane. Yeah. And Brendan was down on his knees singing That One Night With You, and Elvis tapped him on the shoulder with the cane. And when Brendan looked up, sure, he was gobsmacked. And then Elvis took off. And Brendan said over the microphone, "That was Elvis Presley." And everybody started to laugh. They thought it was a joke, thought it was part of the act. But when we were in the dressing room with Elvis, we went to see him at Caesar's Palace, and we were lucky enough to be invited into his dressing room, which was done out at the time like a gymnasium. Rowing machines, bicycles, weightlifting areas and all this.
Right. He was fit as a fiddle at that time.
And he said to Brendan that night, "Are you still doing all that old stuff of mine, you know?" but he was so much taller than I imagined. the one thing that sticks in my mind was how tall Elvis Presley was.
Yeah. And I presume incredibly charismatic when you walked into a room and he was in there, like that all the energy was up.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And like, and in those days, no mobile phones, no cameras, you know, nothing to record the thing, which I often have.
It's up in there though, Paddy. Like memories. People used to be fine with them before. Yeah. Okay, let's have a listen to Paddy Cole's second choice, Brendan Borer and the Royal Show Band, the Hucklebuck. And the Royal Show Band and the Hucklebuck, Paddy Cole's second choice today. You were tight. The bands were tight, weren't they?
Oh, they were. Yeah. They were very much so. And I have to say, like, it was the Big Eight that I was with when we went to Las Vegas. But the Royal Show Band had really made the mark in Vegas before that. And I still keep in touch with Jerry Cullen and Eddie Sullivan, the two members of the Royal Show Band. And we often talk about those days. But Brendan and Tom Dunphy left the Royal and formed the Big Eight. And Twink was in the band. Twink was a very big star in Vegas with us in the band at that time as well. And it was a good band, good playing band. And getting back to what you said earlier, Brendan, about the versatility of the show bands. The Americans couldn't believe that we would be doing country and western music, Dixieland jazz music. We had four Irish dancers. I would play a couple of jigs and reels on the tin whistle.
Oh, okay.
And they would dance.
Yeah.
And it was a complete show, like, and all by the same group of musicians.
And how long did you spend out there?
I was on and off. I was with the Big Eight for about 5 years.
And was it a good old life out there?
Oh, yeah, we made the best of it. It was tough work as well. We did three shows a night, six nights a week.
Okay.
Each show was an hour long. So you were in the place. Like, your first show might be from 8 to 9. The second show might be from half 10 to half 11. The last show could be later than that, needless to say. And my eldest son, Pierce, was started going to school there, and we lived as far away. Helen and myself, like, we had an apartment far away from the strip as possible to have some semblance of normality. And the wives did the school runs and all that sort of thing to try and have a normal sort of life, because Vegas could take you in and spit you out very easily, you know, if you let it. You know, you had to be on your toes, because everything was 24 hours, which to us, a crowd of Irish guys, that included pubs. So we were waiting to be put out every night.
And nobody to send
nobody you, came to
nobody
put us
to
out.
Nobody ask you, had you no homes to go to. Nightmare. And your next choice, I think, harks back to the days in Vegas as well. Tell me about Louis Prima.
Oh, God, Louis Prima. I always loved Louis Prima. And one of my biggest thrills was to get to meet him in Vegas. Louis Prima, when we were in the Stardust, Louis Prima used to work the Sands Hotel, which was practically across the road from the Stardust on the Strip. And when he did his last show at night, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that, most of the entertainers on the Strip were in to see that last show of his. And he was the zaniest character of all time. You never knew what was going to happen on stage. He was mad as a hatter, really was. And he came from New Orleans, and I did several trips to New Orleans myself, playing jazz and that. A great, Sam Butera, his sax player, was great. I used to idolise him playing the sax as well. But I used to look forward to getting to see him on the last show, and you would see everybody from the suit there. But he was a great all-round musician, a great showman.
Okay, let's have a listen. So this is Paddy Cole's third choice, Louis Prima, and this is Angelina. Angelina.
eat cutlet parmesan so that I can gaze upon Angelina. Angelina, the waitress at the pizzeria. I keep zooping minestrone just to be with her alone, Angelina. Angelina, the waitress at the pizzeria. Ti voglio bene.
Ti voglio bene.
Angelina, I adore you. Ti voglio bene.
Ti voglio bene.
Angelina, I live for you.
Louis Prima there and Angelina, and that's Paddy Cole's third choice. So, Paddy, that brings us to kind of the a guy like him now, who's like a jazz man, kind of. That there's more to it than music. It strikes me almost as jazz, kind of, it's a way of life, it's a way of being as well, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And also to be a showman,
yeah,
to sell it. And Louis Prima was great at that. He could play, he played trumpet, he could play and sing, but he could sell it on stage. And people basically, and for all the years I went to the Cork Jazz Festival and all that, Dixieland jazz was still always
favourite. You see, that's what I would remember you for up in the metropole and places like that. Yeah,
exactly.
And the Dixieland, that's the New Orleans
That originated in New Orleans,
You spent a bit of time down there.
Oh, I did 7 trips to New Orleans altogether. One day, Helen and myself were walking along the Mississippi River and we heard the strains of a Dixieland jazz band. I had the clarinet, we were going to the club and I went over, there were 5 or 6 guys playing and they were collecting. They had a hat in front of them, collecting money. And I went over and asked them, could I sit in and play a tune with them? And at the beginning, they thought I wanted a share of the money. So they shut me down. But then eventually I sat in when I explained my case, played a couple of numbers. When I was finished, one of the guys said to me, these were all black guys, like which all the great players were there. One of them said to me, you know, you play pretty good for a white guy. And I said, that put me in my box anyway.
Now, your next choice brings us right back to Ireland. We were talking about Butch Moore earlier. So, Walking the Streets in the Rain. This was his Eurovision song.
That's right. He was the first man to represent Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest, 1965 in Naples. And the funny thing about it, Brendan, like he didn't win it, but Dublin Airport, there were thousands of people out. It was like the Irish soccer team, you know, coming in, not winning anything, but thousands of people out to welcome him home. And the place was packed, but banners and placards up, welcome home, Butch, well done, Butch, all this sort of thing. And after that, the band around Ireland, the crowds were packed. It was a great band, though. I was lucky in most of the bands that I was in, they were all great musicians, the Capital Show Band. Unfortunately, there's only Eamon Monaghan and myself left of that original band now. All the boys have passed on, which is very sad when you think of it. They were great. But Butch was a great guy and a great crooner, Pat Boone-type singer. And the girls loved them, you know. So
yeah. Okay, here he is, Butch Moore, Walking the Streets in the Rain. Butch Moore there, Walking the Streets in the Rain. I was just saying to you there, that could have been a massive hit in America, you think? Like,
If the proper promotion had been done, Butch had a great voice. And a lot of Irish singers, like, were great artists and great singers that could have made it big.
Yeah.
You know, but the proper promotion, proper management and that.
So people were happy to be around playing the packed dance halls in Ireland and kind of making, probably making good money off that.
That was it. We were offered a coast-to-coast tour of the American college campuses one time at the Capital Show Band.
Yeah.
And you want to hear some of the excuses that the boys, my wife wouldn't let me be away for 7 months. She probably would have been delayed. But it's all these excuses. And we turned it down. That could have broken a complete new audience for us because we did Villanova University and it really went down well. So the promoter wanted us to do a tour which would have taken 7 or 8 months going across America. I was shut down.
Listen, your final choice today is Luke Kelly singing Raglan Road. Why this?
Well, Luke, for two reasons. Luke Kelly was, I'm delighted to say, was a great pal of mine, a great friend of mine. Much to Helen's displeasure, a lot of the time when I was taking a drink at the time, I used to hang out very late sometimes with Luke. But he was a great guy.
Where would you hang out?
In the old stand bar mostly at the time, just off Grafton Street there.
Oh, yeah.
Wicklow Street.
Yeah.
And I remember one Christmas Eve, we left it fairly late and we were coming around the corner and they were doing the window in Brian Thomas for the after Christmas sale. And they all knew Luke, yeah, with the mad head of hair, and he knocked the window and we went in and bought two handbags, one for each of the wives, as a peace offering to go home. Yeah. But and the other reason is for Patrick Kavanagh, of course, a Monaghan man and a Skene, and was one of the greatest poets of our time. Not a great goalkeeper, though, according to rumour in the area.
Really, yeah.
He was in goals for Enniskeen one time, the story goes anyway. And they were playing Cross Midland Rangers. And he left during the match to get an ice cream, which, of course, was a godsend to Cross Midland Rangers.
Yeah. Did you also, have I got this right, did you used to play golf with Luke?
Yes, I played golf. People didn't realise that Luke was actually a good golfer.
Yeah.
But he hadn't much interest in it, you know. Like, you'd see him running across the fairway with 4 pint bottles of stout with the froth flying out of the top of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
much to the displeasure of all the members, you know.
I know, but I'd say loosened up the swing. Like, some fellas would say a few points.
It certainly loosened the swing, I'll tell you. That's right,
Class. Listen, just before we play that, how are you?
I'm okay. Thanks, Brent. Thanks for asking. Yeah, thanks to Professor John Crown. At one stage, maybe a year and a half ago or so, it looked like it was all over. And I felt like that. I felt that I was. And most people thought I was on the way out at that stage. And in fairness to John Crown, he persevered with the chemotherapy, which is not very pleasant. Now, I've been off the chemotherapy for nearly a year, but ironically enough, during the week I was in with Professor Crown and it's gotten a little bit worse and I'm going to have to come back on some treatment again. But if I got to do it, I got to do it. Like, it's a whole changed life. Like, there's no music, no golf, no travelling to the sun, if they say to the sunshine, all that. But you suddenly realise, okay, I've done all those things and I've got to do what they tell me. Because John Crown and his team have been fantastic to me. So whatever they decide to do, I'll do it. And I keep positive. I go out for a little walk every day in Herbert Park and I have great friends, which I'm lucky, and family around us. And I meet some of my buddies for a cup of coffee. And like as I said, that's better therapy than anything. We rehash the same lies over and over.
And listen, you can't play at all, no?
No. I can't. The cancer I have is in the lining of the lung and it's incurable. But look, it is what it is. I was a bit of a shock when I was told I had it, needless to say. But I was always very positive about it and I've spoken to other people that have cancer as well and I've tried to encourage them to be positive. You know, like, and one guy came up from Cork to see me and he had cancer and he keeps in touch with me through his brother. And I just accept it. I try and keep as positive as I can.
Yeah.
And whatever I have to do now, the next treatment, I'll just do it. And like I say, I haven't been up in my hometown in Castleblaney in a couple of years. My sister's come to see me.
Would you not be able for the trip?
The
no?
trip would be a bit. My son Pat now has volunteered to take me. And another buddy of mine, a Monaghan man, Mick Sherry, who always drove me to my chemotherapy sessions and collected me afterwards, he's on for bringing me up sometime to Blaney. I'd like to do that. I used to go to Lahinch a lot, which I loved, and play golf and meet a lot of friends there. But a lot of things, you're tired most of the time, you know what I mean? And I do the walk and I'm into a routine of taking a bit of a nap now and again. Of course, some of my friends, so-called friends, would say to me, at your age, not a bit of wonder you're tired.
But listen, you are very positive, I can see. You were kind of one of these people who was born fairly happy, though, were you? You were born upbeat, were you?
But I was. I think I must have been. I was an only boy in a house of six sisters. And people say, God, you must have been spoiled. You must be joking. Spoiled, you must be joking. But they were all very good and they're coming to see me now. Unfortunately, two of my sisters have passed away, Jacinta and Sadie. But the other sisters keep in touch with me all the time and they're great.
Okay. Paddy, I'd say you're choosing your engagements and what you spend your time and energy on selectively and wisely these days. So I'm very grateful you came in to us today. I really am.
I'm delighted to be here, Brian. It's lovely to see you again after all these years.
It's fantastic to see you. Paddy Cole, thank you so much. And we'll play out with Luke Kelly on Raglan Road.
Great. Thank you.